This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I wanted to tell you a brief story that might sound familiar, which is a story about what is going on in Europe, you know, after the financial crisis in 2008. Throughout the continent, we have this immense operation of the socialization of losses of the financial sector, and then of the dismantlement of the model of society in which we had grown up, basically. You know, in Europe, we have what we call the social state or the welfare state. This is loosely a model of society that comes out of World War II, and it's a basic constitutional arrangement that is based on the existence of strong public education, pension, and health systems, strong unions for what we call the social dialogue or the social conversation, where big decisions about our model of society are supposed to be taken, and basically where we used to have fair systems of taxation that would allow for a certain margin of social redistribution, right? That's the ideal. Then there's a lot to be said about it, but that's basically the archetype of what a European society was in the second half of the 20th century. And suddenly this crisis, the financial crisis, is used to accelerate a process that was already there. Neoliberalism is the name, the general name that we have given to it since at least since the mid-70s. And basically we assist to this systematic operation for the dismantlement of our social rights, basically. I said that this story might sound familiar because all European societies are being the object of intense accelerated processes of inequality, of concentration of wealth and power in smaller and smaller elites, while the numbers of poverty and social exclusion do not stop to grow. We have a process of precarization of work, especially for the young, numbers of mass unemployment, especially among the young, that are completely untenable, the image of the working poor, families that lose their houses to foreclosures, and so on, and so on, and so on. Now, this is a political crisis in the deep sense of the term. It is political because this is not an atmospheric, let's say, process. It's not something that happens because it happens. It is basically an intended operation. It is based on political decisions. It is based on ideological conceptions of what our society must look like. But at the same time, it is political because it creates friction. It creates reactions. And in Europe, in the last few years, we have seen an immense crisis of political representation. We in Spain, where all these processes have been intensified to a level that is hardly imaginable from here, imagine a society where mass unemployment among the young is over 50%, where unemployment in general is at 25%, where one third of the population is threatened with social exclusion or poverty, where there are children who cannot eat three times a day, and so on and so forth. Basically, what we conceived this moment as a moment of organic crisis. An organic crisis is a moment where basically the system cannot guarantee its own ideological reproduction. What does that mean? That means that there are more and more people, a growing section of the population, that basically does not support, does not buy into the narratives that allow for maintaining the statu quo, a social order. There are growing masses in Europe that are disaffected, that feel this distance towards the political establishment, particularly, and that tend to manifest that. How? Well, in the way that in our demeaned and empty formalist democratic systems, the citizens have the instance that they have in order to express their opinions, which is through elections. After 2008, in the next 19 electoral processes that are in Europe, 18 governments lost the elections. Only one managed to win the elections, and that was Angela Merkel in Germany. So what happened? All throughout Europe, we had very stable, very strong bipartisan systems. party systems. Those are the systems in which basically you have two alternatives. One is center-left, progressive, liberal, social democratic, with the differences in each country, and the other is a mildly conservative, Christian democratic, conservative liberal option. And this has been very stable throughout almost 5-6 decades, and it's a democratic regime based on the alternance between these two. What happened in this electoral cycle? 18 governments lost the elections, center-left and center-right governments, and then the citizens vote for the other option, for the alternative. They want change. What happens? The alternative comes into power, and then they impose exactly the same macroeconomic policies, the policies of austerity. Austerity is a political paradigm that narrows down the democratic margins that government have, and they say there is no alternative, this is the only option. And austerity means that operation, that massive operation for the dismantlement of welfare state societies, basically. So what do the citizenship of these countries do in the next electoral cycle? When they have tried one option and has imposed austerity, they have tried the other option and it has imposed austerity. Well, in the next election, they vote for whoever manages to capitalize that feeling of discontent and to articulate a political alternative to the establishment, right? What is the problem with this logic? The problem is that that political space is empty in itself. It's simply the space of a discontent. It is the space of a reaction to the order of austerity. And that space can be articulated in very, very different political directions. So throughout Europe, if you look at European societies, you have a political crisis of representation almost in every single European state. But the kind of reactions, the kind of third options, so to speak, the kind of alternatives to the establishment, to the bipartisan establishment, are very, very different among them. So we have, in very abstract terms, in very general terms, we have a generally progressive, left-wing oriented, populist reaction, a plebeian populist reaction, as we have seen in Greece, as we have seen more or less in Portugal, as we have seen in Spain, but at the same time, you have pre-authoritarian, xenophobic, pre-fascist forces that have grown tremendously all across Europe, across different countries, from the UK to Germany, from Austria to Finland, from Denmark to Greece itself as well, where an openly neo-Nazi force got 9% of the vote almost. And so there is a competition for the political articulation of the popular reaction to the imposition, to the dismantlement of our model of society. We, because I speak in the plural, because I'm a member of Podemos, how many of you have heard of Podemos at all? Okay. What is Podemos? Podemos is and that's why when I was asked for the title, I said a hypothesis. Podemos was a hypothesis at the beginning. 2 years ago, it was a bunch of academics and activists, not many of them, not a lot. In the first, I always tell that the first meeting I went to, there were 14 people in a room in a student apartment in Madrid, and I was the second oldest person in the room. And we were discussing about, you know, the assault on the apparatus of the state and so forth. And I was saying, okay, I've been through this, you know, like I've lived this before, but it kind of worked without no resources, with very, very powerful enemies having against us all the powers of the state, all the media, all the financial elites at the Spanish and European level in just 3 months. 3 months, because we were born preparing a campaign for the European elections. We managed to get 8% of the vote in those elections. Then a year later, we had the local elections in Spain, and we won 7 out of the 12 biggest cities in Spain. Yeah, including Madrid and Barcelona and Valencia and Zaragoza, like the main capitals, the main urban centers of the country, and we are governing those. And then, of course, our goal, our objective was to get to the general elections that took place in last December. And in those elections, we got 21% of the vote and 71 MPs. And it was completely historical because the Spanish bipartisan system is one that electorally makes it very hard for third parties to get in. This might sound familiar as well. But it was not enough. It was not enough because the numbers didn't add up for the formation of a government, which was from the beginning our option. So the elections were repeated last June, and we faced a very, very long campaign, and all the polls were putting us as the second political force in Spain, behind the right wing, but leading, so to speak, the space of opposition, and hence being in a position to lead the government. The elections came on at the end of June, and we didn't manage to reach that objective. We basically repeated the same result. We got 21% of the vote, 71 MPs vaguely associated with Marxism. But it was not enough. It was not enough, and now we are entering into a new cycle. This is something that I guess must sound familiar as well, and that imposes a period of reflection. It has happened throughout Europe, not only in our country. There was a window of opportunity that was opened for a radical mass movement that would pose a very fast operation for the conquest of power, not going through the usual means that are articulated in our democracies. For instance, in Spain, every single government has been formed through parliamentary opposition, through a slow process, you know, of work in parliament as the opposition of a government, and then you win the next election, what I was mentioning before. Our hypothesis was completely, radically different. It was the assault from, so to speak, the social sphere through electoral means directly to the executive power. And it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. It's been historic. It's been really powerful, really powerful. In our country, we have never witnessed such growth of a radical democratic option in such a short period of time. But now we face a strategic and tactical debate about what to do. What to do? We have to rethink the problem of organization, because of course everybody agrees we need to build strong organization. We need to keep building this base. We need to be present in all the social struggles, but we need to redefine what the relation to, let's say, from of means to ends is. Why? Because in articulating Podemos, we transgressed, so to speak, some of the deepest dogmas of the left, so to speak. We were used to conceive of politics and of the political struggle as a sort of lineal operation that proceeded, generally put, in these terms. You accumulate force in the social, you accumulate force through struggle, labor struggle, cultural struggle, political struggle, and then you translate, when you have accumulated enough force, you translate that force through elections, right? You will conquer political power as a result of mobilizing a broad social base and then transform it into political power. Well, at the time when we created Podemos, at the time when we were theorizing about this organic crisis in our society and so forth, we had no such social strength at all. We were on the opposite, on a moment of reflux of political mobilizations. Due to the strength of the neoliberal attack on society, all of the traditional reservoirs of social force of the left, the unions, the universities, independent journalism, neighborhood associations, grassroots mobilization, networks of activists and so forth, they were dismantled. They were very weak. But at the same time, there was more than ever a huge amount of the population that was sensitive, that was ready to connect with a message that ideologically was pretty weak. It was not the result of a slow process of education of the masses and so forth, as we used to think in the left. No, no, no. It was a process, a very fast and massive process of identification with very simple signifiers that immediately traced a boundary in society, a division between the establishment, the elites, the 1%, whatever you want to call it, and the average, ordinary, decent working man and woman. So we had to transgress that, let's say, grand schema of conception of how political struggle proceeds and concentrates also on means that were traditionally despised by the left. Winnie knows very well and has explained very well how this network, in the social networks strategies, have revolutionized the way we create organization and build organization. It's not a tool of communication. It's capacity building, it's organization building, and the message is already there. The politics are already there. But we did also something else that at the beginning made all the leftists in Spain, you know, shiver. How do you say, shiver? We went to mass media. We went to the silliest TV shows in the country. The kind of shows that, being an educated leftist, you despise as being, you know, junk food for the masses. We assume that those were the most important spaces of social politicization in the country. That's what people watches, right? That's where they form a narrative and an idea of what is going on. And we went to all of them, and we prepared for that consciously and very seriously. We crafted messages that were simple, but that identified those signifiers, as you were mentioning, in order to build an army. Build an army with words. You know, the words in the political battle are like the hills. If you conquer the hills, you have a position from which you can win. And there were words like democracy, like sovereignty, like equality, like justice, that we managed to load with a revolutionary potential, a revolutionary capacity. In doing that, we of course renounced and we abandoned a significant part of our tools, you know, it was not an elaborated analysis of the historical and social moment we were living through. It was a tactical operation trying to identify the weakest links in the ideological reproduction of the system, concentrating all of our forces on those battles and going to the most open fields imaginable, television and so forth, to fight those battles. Now, this has advantages and also poses problems. The advantages are obvious and are 71 MPs. The socialists have 85, and we have 71. So that's, in the correlation of forces, that's where we are. 85, 71. It's very close. It also might ring a bell, right? It was damn close, but not enough. And why not enough? Not enough because the final element, I think, that one needs to understand in order to understand what is going on in my country, but I think also abroad, is that we have, from the beginning, and this is also a break with a certain melancholic, nostalgic culture of organization, of political organization, we have a sincere and honest and an evident and explicit ethics of victory. From the beginning, we went there with a discourse, a form of speech that was even obsessively centered around the possibility of winning our country back. An obsession with government too. We want the government. We understand that being in government only grants you a part of power. It's a small fraction even of power. Imagine in Europe where we have ceded our sovereignty to unelected institutions and so forth. And if you win the government, if we had won the government, immediately a completely new battle would have started against the powers that be. We have seen it in the Greek case for sure. But everybody recognized from the beginning that we were serious. You know, on the night of the European elections, when we got 8% of the vote and nobody knew who we were, like mainstream Spain didn't know what Podemos was. So our introduction to the country was that night, and we went in front of the cameras, press conference, very serious, bunch of 20-year-olds, and our spokesman went there and said, very serious, and he said, tonight we have lost the election. Tomorrow in Spain, there will be families that will lose their house, their houses. Tomorrow they will be young people heading to the airport to emigrate because they cannot find a job here, so on and so on and so on. So imagine the average ordinary citizen who doesn't know who we are, suddenly we get 8% of the vote and 5 MEPs, and we get out and say we have lost the election. And that is a very, very important element, and I think it has probably played a role here too, which is, and also it resonates with, I think, what is an ideological trend, a very important trend in our societies. And I think that Donald Trump plays with that a lot too, right? This ethics of winning and of instant winning. That's why I was saying, and I finish with this, that this model of organizing, this model of doing politics, this model of trying to articulate that ambiguous, ideologically empty space of contestation has advantages in the sense that we have produced reality at an incredible speed and to an extent that generations before us hadn't dreamed of reaching, but at the same time, it creates very weak movements because it is not precisely for the same reasons. It is not the result of a very slow process of education and construction of social tissue and social relations and so forth. It has the risk of evaporating. It has the risk of, and this is also in symphony with our society, it creates bubbles. Bubbles of fame, bubbles of what is trendy. We managed to create, it was really cool for a while in Spain. The cool thing was to be in Podemos, right? That was the cool thing. It was really sexy. It was the place to be. Yeah, but that it is very hard to maintain that in time, especially when the lightning operation hasn't worked, or partially hasn't worked. So now the challenge is how to use all that potential, all that force, an immense accumulation of force that we have now, how to translate that into power. One thing is to have force, but force dissipates. The other is to build power, to build the trenches, to build models of counter society, to build societies of resistance, to build social spaces of solidarity and cooperation, to basically move from being a guerrilla to being a permanent army in a certain sense. and that's in the very nature, in the very essence of our movements, that is a key strategic operation and one that will determine whether we are able to fight the second round with better odds to win, to keep growing, or whether we will dissipate as the expression of a social discontent or a social protest that necessarily, in its essence, is limited in time. So that is the challenge that we have ahead, and I know we are not the only ones to have that challenge ahead, right? What to do with all this immense social force that we have managed to create? How to combine it with an institutional presence? How to distribute that force at the different levels where power is managed and reproduced? I think that is the essential challenge that we have ahead of us, and that's also the reason why I came to follow this convention, to learn about the debate that you're having around the Sanders campaign now, what to do next, and to tell our story, and hopefully to draw inspiration and ideas, because it's amazing, right? But not only here, in many, many different places. All the details are different, all the names are different, all the characters are different, but the plot is the same. The plot is the same everywhere. So either we build a democratic international, and that doesn't mean having an organization and an umbrella for all these forms of That means being able to exchange means, tools, ideas, resources, support,